Welcome along to this brand spanking new podcast. So the midweek F1 is going to be the last word on the F1 race just gone. And then we're going to look ahead to the next race coming up. I'm Nicola Hume. And as always, I am joined by the Oracle himself, Mr. Ben Edwards.
Thanks, Nicola. It's so great to be here and looking forward to the start of a whole new season when anything is really possible. We've got new drivers in Formula One. We've got new cars. But even though they've been pre-season testing in Bahrain, and that's what we're going to be talking about, it's so difficult to know who's going to be at the top end until we get into these first races.
Also, shout out to you for pronouncing Bahrain correctly. You're such a commentator. Absolutely nailed it. So we're going to be navigating through the 2025 F1 runners and riders with a lot of help from our very special guest.
Yes, and we'll also be getting into the We Need to Talk About section, and that's going to be fun. The teams and drivers who might be feeling under pressure in this very competitive sport.
Then we've got the big one. It's our very own midweek F1 prediction competition of the world. Yeah, that's right. So we're going to be choosing who we think will be the top three in this weekend's Australian Grand Prix as our very own championship begins as well. It's very exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing, isn't it? And of course, we're going to concentrate on who we think are going to be the front runners in Australia for this first race of the season. So let's get stuck in.
Yes. So we're going to unpick everything what happened in pre-season testing. Now, our very old cynic producer, Jim, was actually there. So he actually has some talking points that he wants to bring up. So Jim, talk to us. What are we talking about?
The big thing being there was all the cars look very, very similar to one another, being it's the last year of the current regulations. So who do you think is going to be the top teams this year, bearing in mind no Nui at Red Bull?
Right, well, we can talk about Red Bull. So I work with Red Bull. I host the Talking Ball podcast for Red Bull. So I don't want to be too Red Bull heavy here and too, like, flying the flag for Red Bull. But I do think that Max will do well this year. Let's be honest, I know Adrian is now over with Aston Martin, but majority of the season last year, he wasn't really touching the car. He was focusing on the RB17, on his hypercar. So I think they're probably used to him not really being there and making tweaks. So I think Red Bull are in for a shout.
I agree. And fundamentally, the rules have not changed. And although that car was very strong at the beginning of last year, it wasn't so good in the latter part of the year. As we know, the McLaren was the stronger car. They had developed it better. But let's not forget, it's not a massive change like going into 2026. So it is fundamentally an Adrian Newey car, even though it's been developed over the years. And there is every chance, if they've realised what didn't quite work last year and they've been able to correct it — I'm not sure they have completely, because we don't know yet from the testing in Bahrain — but yeah, I still think Red Bull are going to be a key player. And of course, Max Verstappen is such a high-level driver. Can he go for yet another title? Can he make it five titles in a row?
Or Lewis. I mean, Lewis is in a Ferrari, right? I mean, you'd expect this is probably his last chance to throw his hat in the ring for an eight-time world championship. Could he do it in a Ferrari? Possibly, because Ferrari was strong last year, and then Lewis behind the wheel this year.
Absolutely. And that is, of course, one of the biggest questions that everybody's having building up to this season. Yeah. How is Lewis going to get on with Ferrari? Obviously, he's being very positive at the moment. He's up with Charles Leclerc, who is a very talented driver. Yes. But, as you say, there's every chance that Lewis Hamilton could go on to become an eight-time world champion for the first time ever. That's never been achieved in Formula One. But to do it with a new team is never easy. And, you know, it's the first time he's not had Mercedes power in the back of his Formula One car. He's gone with Ferrari power. And everything is different when you're with a different team like that. Already he's asked for changes on the steering wheel, I noticed, you know, adjustments to how he changes gear and other adjustments. So it does take time to really feel at home with a new team. But we know he's so talented. It's going to be fascinating to see how he gets on.
Yeah. Producer Jim, what else you got?
Well, I want to cover off McLaren. Yeah. They finished so well. And in the test, their long runs were apparently sensational. And also the two driver dynamics there. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, interesting. I'm going to throw out a curveball, and I think Oscar might outdrive Lando this year. I think he's got it in him to be a world champion. I'm not saying that Lando doesn't have it in him, but I think Oscar has a certain drive behind him and a certain passion behind him that I think means that he doesn't make as many mistakes as Lando does. There's so many issues that Lando does. Like if he's starting right at the front, turn one always seems to be his hiccup. And it seems to keep happening over and over again. So will that happen with Oscar? I just don't think it will. And I think he's going to smash it this year. I can feel it.
That's really interesting that you feel that. And I do understand what you're saying, because Oscar has a great ability to him. And he's still learning, isn't he? Because he's, you know, he's not been in Formula One nearly as long as Lando. I do think the Australia race is going to be fascinating, of course, because we've never seen an Australian driver. We've seen on podium, but never we've never actually had an Australian driver in official Formula One championship achieve a podium they could hold on to from Australia, because Daniel Ricciardo ended up on it once, but then got disqualified. Unfortunately, it was a car issue he got disqualified for. And I saw Mark Webber on the podium, but he was up there celebrating driving with Minardi, and he finished fifth, which was a brilliant performance. And I remember the excitement of Mark Webber being up on that podium, but it wasn't because he was top three, so it wasn't an official podium.
Yeah.
So wouldn't it be amazing if Oscar can start this season by actually getting on the podium, maybe even winning it, if you think he's going to be that strong?
I think it's possible. Okay. I mean, they were so strong at the end of the season. I mean, obviously, we have just had testing, but I know, producer Jim, you were saying it was really cold and it was windy.
Freezing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very windy, very cold. So I don't think we can read too much of that, because it's not going to be like that in Melbourne. However, the top time was by Carlos Sainz in a Williams, which leads me on nicely to the midfield squabble. Williams and Alpine look to have taken a massive step forward. Do you think, either of you, do you think they can knock on the door of podiums this year?
It's a good question, isn't it? Because we've got the four teams that are all looking so strong up at the front. McLaren, Red Bull, Mercedes, of course, are still looking very, very strong, and Ferrari. So you've then got eight drivers with those teams, who in theory are all going to be delivering extremely well throughout the course of the season. So to get onto the podium for one of the other teams, which we're then calling the midfield, that is tough, but not impossible, because we all know in Formula One things can change.
Yes.
And I was very impressed with what Williams are doing in testing. They are definitely making a step up. I think what Carlos did was very impressive. I think his knowledge and experience coming into the Williams team at this stage is very useful. Mm-hmm. Alex Albon, his teammate, is also very rapid. So actually, as a combination, I don't know, what do you think? But I think that's a very good combination of drivers.
I think Carlos might give Alex a good run for his money, but I think it means that Alex is just going to up his game.
Okay.
Because I think there were so many hiccups with Williams last year, not so much with Alex, but, you know, with everyone else as the other driver. But I think Carlos is going to be a really interesting person at Williams. Like, is he going to stay there? Is he just doing it for a year before he then moves over to Audi? Who knows? So is he going to really give it 100%? I don't know.
It's going to be
fascinating. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, and I'm really pleased to see Williams making a bit of a step up, hopefully, because they've been through a tough time.
Yeah.
But James Vowles, the boss, is definitely picking it up. They've got a lot more people now working for them, over 1,000 people now working at Williams, whereas it was down sort of about 750 before. So he's building it up, but you can't do it all in 1 year. He knows that. He's moving on to the next few years to really build Williams up. But yeah, it would be lovely to see them get the odd great result.
This is my thing. Because we are sort of questioning what Carlos is going to do. And I know that they've said they signed a multi-year contract, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's not going to skip over to Audi when that happens in 2026. So what does that mean for Williams? Like, how hard are they going to hold on to him?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think when you start the season, you just throw everything into it from both sides. You just got to go for it completely. Mm. And then as it develops through the season, then we'll get a bit more of an idea of how they feel about each other. How's the season developing? Is Carlos going to be frustrated, or is he going to be happy with how things are going?
Yeah.
I think, but for the start of the season, everybody just throws themselves in as much as they can. They'll have learnt a bit from the testing in Bahrain, probably more than we can, because the teams know how much fuel they've got in their cars individually. So they get a bit more idea of how quick they are. But we'll get a bit more idea with Australia and then several races. I've often thought commentating, oh, we'll do the first race. We'll know then who's going to be winning. Actually, it usually takes the first three or four races before you really get an idea. And look at last year, where it looked like Max was going to dominate the championship, and actually he had to fight for it in the end.
Yeah, it ended up being quite an exciting season, and I wonder if we're going to get some chaotic races like Brazil again. Or
a little bit doom and gloom, especially on the Alonso side of the garage. Do we think, this begs the question, Adrian Newey will be parachuted in for updates on this year's car? Or do you think he's just flat out for next year with the rule change?
I think it's got to be a bit of both, hasn't it? I mean, Adrian's got to get his hands on this car to understand how Aston Martin are working and how he's going to connect with the team and all that sort of stuff. So he's probably already hands-on, but there's not really much that he can do to tweak the car for this year. But yeah, next year will be the big move. It all just depends on whether Adrian wants to work with Lance. I don't know. It'll maybe be a tricky season for them this year, but then I think next year will be massive for Aston Martin with Adrian Newey taking over everything. Yeah, thoughts?
I agree. I don't think he's going to be able to do a huge amount about the current car. Yeah. He will bring a few little tweaks, no doubt, but yeah. I think the focus...
Red notebook.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. But the focus surely has to move on to next year when under new regulations, that is when Aston Martin will really be throwing themselves utterly into it. I do agree with you there. But as you know, Adrian may come up with a few little tweaks this year that do help.
Yeah.
Last year was a bit disappointing with Aston Martin, and I didn't see anything particularly invigorating from the test in Bahrain. But we always know that testing does not always show us what teams are going to be doing. So we will find out.
And curveball, do you reckon that they're going to throw a lot of money and try and get Max?
But it's possible. Yeah, absolutely. Because the way that Lawrence Stroll, who has put so much into all of this to make Aston Martin a successful team, I think he would risk it. I think he would certainly throw everything to try and get Max Verstappen in the car.
Yeah, and I think they've got the money to buy him. That's absolutely possible. Do you reckon, Jim?
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, there's definitely the money. It's just whether the car's any good.
It's the money and the fact that he could then be back in an Adrian Newey car that I think would be quite interesting.
Yes. Right. Social media.
Right. Social media roundup. I mean, the last few weeks has just been full of Lewis Hamilton, hasn't it? Because there was that famous photo of him looking like the Godfather outside Enzo Ferrari's house, which is right in the middle of their private test track. I heard that they're allowed access to use that house. Is that right?
Not all drivers, no. Not all drivers. No, very rare. Michael Schumacher was the last Ferrari driver who was allowed to be in Enzo Ferrari's house.
No way. Yeah.
So Sebastian Vettel didn't get that chance. Charles Leclerc hasn't had that chance. Fernando Alonso, when he was driving for Ferrari, he didn't get that either. But it was part of the contract for Lewis Hamilton that he is in Enzo Ferrari's house.
Part of his contract, was it? I reckon Charles Leclerc's not happy with that. There's got to be jealousy there. Because does that make Lewis the number one driver?
Well, we will see.
I don't know.
The number one driver, ultimately, when you're in Formula One, it's on track. It's not. It's your results. It's your performance. Of course.
Yeah, but he's literally using the house that Charles Leclerc's not allowed to use.
Absolutely.
So I think they've already picked their number one.
But, yeah, Charles Leclerc is very confident there and he's very engaged with that team.
Mm.
So I don't think he'll be too worried about the fact that Lewis is staying in Enzo Ferrari's house. I don't think that would bother him too much.
If that was me, I'd be utterly fuming. If I was already part of the team for a few years and then another driver comes over and then he can have access to that house and I'm not allowed to use it, I would be livid.
It matters more to some than others, I think.
Shall we introduce our guest?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I'm very pleased to say that we're joined by motoring legend, former racing driver, journalist and presenter, Vicky Butler Henderson. Vicky, it's so great to have you with us. Really fantastic. We worked together many, many years ago, but your work in cars has gone on forever.
What did you do together?
Well, hello, it's so lovely to be here, by the way. Ben and I worked together at the British Touring Car Championship TV series, so I was their main presenter. Ben was presenting and doing some commentary as well. So you had an awful lot to do every weekend.
Yeah, but it was a great time.
Yeah.
And your brother was actually doing a bit of touring cars at the time, wasn't he?
He was, a bit of racing himself. Yeah,
nice.
Yeah. So we still both race today, actually. Charlie and I both have racing licenses still, so it's good.
That's great.
So talk to me about racing, because you're from a racing family, aren't you, really? So it's just kind of been in your blood. But it's not all three of you that races, it's just you and your brother.
Yeah, I've got an older sister as well who always thinks she's the forgotten child because no one ever talks about her because she's not involved in cars, but she's a fab mum and everything else. But my grandfather used to race a Fraser Nash at Brooklands in the 30s, and then his son my dad. He was in the British karting team when he was a teenager. And then dad had an old kart chassis up at the farm. Dad was turned into a farmer, stuck a lawnmower engine on it. I went up and down the farm on it. And it was thanks to him, he opened the door to motorsport for me. Yeah. And I was like, Dad, I really like this. Can we start racing? So we bought a proper kit and started racing at Rye House in Hoddesdon, which is where Lewis Hamilton eventually started his kart track as well. So I think Rye House, Hoddesdon kart track has got a lot to answer for.
That's where it's at.
That's really interesting because I grew up on a farm and I also drove a cart with a lawn engine as well, around a yard. That's how I used to sort of get into it a little bit. So it's fascinating. Yeah, started in a similar way.
Yeah, but when did you first start your racing career?
Well, I didn't do a karting race career because I couldn't really get into karting, but I started mechanicking actually for a Formula Ford team. And that's what got me going. And then I did get into racing myself.
But you raced Formula First.
I raced Formula First, yeah. And
so did I, but not at the same time.
Yes,
but
that's right.
Obviously, I didn't have access to any of that. I had my dad made me a go-kart, which was a plank of wood, 4 pram wheels.
Brilliant.
And a spoiler with 2 planks of wood. And then he'd push me up and down the road in North London.
What an engine he turned out to be, eh?
Yeah, just his legs. It was great. Basically Flintstones racing is what we did.
Great fun. Well, karting is always a great start for motor racing, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
So have you raced any like quite big names from?
Well, the first kart race I ever did at Rye House was against a certain David Coulthard.
Oh, great. Yeah.
So he'd been racing for a bit longer than me. It was my first ever, you know, as a novice race.
Yeah.
For me, I was, you know, at the back novice and David lapped me. And then then I started racing with people like Dario Franchitti, who went on to be a, you know, superstar in IndyCars. And Oliver Gavin, who raced Le Mans highly successfully. I mean, these kids went on to have amazing careers racing. I became a TV tart, so I went in a slightly different direction.
There's nothing wrong with being a TV tart.
But then my younger brother, he started racing, and he was up against the likes of, you know, Jenson Button, Lewis Hamilton, Anthony Davidson. So I sort of watched them all grow up from, you know, little kids as well.
Who's faster, you or your brother?
That's such a good question.
I had to say it.
Because we never knew until a few years ago, where we both, for the first time in our lives, raced a Mini in the Mini Challenge.
Oh.
And he won.
Did he let him win?
He went on to win the championship that year. And I think I finished about 10th, but it was really psychologically interesting. I sort of qualified, say, 10th, and he was up front. And I was so used to watching him. I was like, I can't worry about him up front. I've just got to sort my own race out. So it wasn't until sort of the end of the first lap, it was at Donington Park, that I managed to look up, see what was going on, assess it. It goes, oh, he's good, he's safe, he's fine. And then get back to it. It was really weird.
Do you reckon he was also thinking of you? Or was he just focused on Of course, that's so sweet. Brotherly love, isn't it?
Great, yeah.
So you had your racing career, you did loads of karting and stuff, but then also in terms of presenting and like the world of automotive, you then went on and hosted Top Gear. How did that come about?
Well, I loved English at school, and I managed to get a job in a magazine, in a car magazine, as an editorial assistant. It was on Car Mechanics magazine when I was sort of just after A level, so I was about, you know, 18, 19.
Yeah.
And then I did a diploma in journalism whilst I was on the job, and eventually then went on to sort of co-launch Max Power magazine, which was a massive modified car magazine. And then I found my true love of testing cars, road testing cars, and then writing about them. And then Top Gear were looking for a girl who could drive. The industry is so small, as we all know.
Mm.
And they had heard about me. So I went, did a screen test, and that was it. And I love being able to slide a car around, talk about it, and give people a sense of what the car's like and a bit of fun along the way.
Yeah.
So I hope I do a little bit of that.
Oh, I think you've always done it fantastically. And I've always thoroughly enjoyed watching you testing cars. And I've seen you on track, so I know how well you can drive a car. So you are pushing cars properly and getting a real feel for them. I think that's great.
Oh, thank you, Ben. It's probably the only thing that I can quite successfully do. Everything else in my life is pretty rubbish.
But also, I mean, so you did Top Gear, but you're still doing Fifth Gear. That's still going.
Yeah, I know. Honestly,
going strong.
Fifth Gear, we've managed to outlast Top Gear, outlast the Grand Tour at the moment.
Going.
But yeah, so we are in our, I don't know, 25th year, something like that. And every single year we put out another series. We're on Discovery and Quest, and we've got another one penned to start filming a bit later on this year.
And we were presenting Jason Plato as a touring car driver back when we were working together. And you're working with Jason still
today,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, Jason's on fifth gear. And also we have Rory Reed and sometimes Corinne Chandock when he's not busy on the F1 side of things. So it's all...
Does it just kind of become chaotic when you're all together? Give us some behind the scenes.
There are certain people who are, they need to be reined in a bit, let's just say.
Are they divas? Yeah.
No, divas, just mischievous little monkeys. Okay. That's all, yeah.
I kind of like that, though. Yeah. What else are you up to? What else is going on?
So I also do a couple of YouTube channels. One is my own, and then another one is one called Driver Reviews. But you have to, if you put that into Google, that will come up with some sort of clubs for golf.
Okay. So what do we put in Google?
So Driver Reviews, Vicky Butler Henderson, and then that will pop up. So right. So that's... a YouTube channel that is really hugely successful. It hasn't been going a year yet, and we've got something like 400,000 subscribers, which is fantastic. So it's just me reviewing a car every fortnight, slidey stuff, smoking tyres, and also some non-smoky slidey tyres as well.
Nice.
So it's a mix of cars.
Great.
Yeah, it's really good.
Is there any particular car that you've driven lately that stands out to you?
The new 911 GTS. So it's the slightly tweaked... latest version of a 911, rear-wheel drive. You can get it four-wheel drive. I didn't want that. I wanted the rear-wheel drive one.
You want to go sideways?
Exactly. And then managed to test that on a circuit, which was all, you know, I had that all to myself. So it was really good.
You had a whole circuit to yourself?
Yeah.
Just to go and have some fun?
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Awesome.
I know. Oh. That's the wonderful thing about my job is that, I still love it hugely, but also I get in those lucky positions of having a whole track to myself. Racing drivers don't ever really get that because you're all, you know, when you go testing, you're always jostling with other people. I mean, just look at F1, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So to have one all to myself is lovely. Oh, perhaps with the exception of Lewis Hamilton, he has Ferrari's, he has Ferrari's own test track.
Yeah,
so he
that's
probably,
true.
Yeah. He and I, that's about the only thing he and I probably have
you're
in common.
Basically the same person.
Well, it's great. So Formula One is what we're talking about, of course. So you've brought it in. What are your thoughts? We want to go through a bit of the batch, don't we, of all the cars and drivers. But overall, what are your thoughts of Formula One?
Well, I'm a huge fan, always have been. And I'm very excited about this year because all the cars have not changed, really. Mm. And as producer Jim was saying earlier on, they all look pretty similar. Yeah. The Red Bull is slightly on the wane. Ferrari could be on the way up. So the unpredictability of the podiums is what is exciting me because nobody likes to sit there for the seventh race in a row and going, right, Verstappen's going to win this one. Yeah. So the unpredictability, I think, is good. And we've got a whole host of new drivers as well.
Well, yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through the teams and just kind of chat about all the new drivers.
Super.
Who we've got lined up for the year. So we're going to start with Kick Sauber because they're the ones that finished completely last year. But you never know what could happen this year. So obviously we've got Nico Hülkenberg, which is...
The ladies' favourite.
An absolute, very handsome, lovely man. And then you've got a brand new guy behind the wheel. So there's Gabriel Bortoleto behind the wheel, who... I can't really have much of an opinion about because I've never really seen him in action. So have any of you seen him?
Well, I'm impressed by him because he's following in the sort of way that Charles Leclerc, George Russell and Oscar Piastri have all done in that they've won Formula 3, then gone on into Formula 2 and won Formula 2 and then gone into Formula 1. Mm. So, you know, to be in that group of drivers that I've just mentioned, you know, current drivers, Leclerc, Russell, Piastri, we're impressed by all of them. I think there's every chance that Bortoleto is going to be very impressive. He was very strong in Formula 2 last year.
Yep, I totally agree with that. Also, I think, though, that because Sauber is turning into Audi for next year, I just think that they're not going to be fully behind it. I think they're just going to be tickling along somewhere. But what a great sort of ground, a great year for him to start, you know, and to be with Hülkenberg. He'll just claw anything that he possibly can.
Yeah. And then we'll move over to Williams. So we've got Alex Albon, who's back. You a fan?
I am, but I wonder if we've seen the best of him. I mean, I don't know what else he can give. If he was going to super shine, he would have shone by now. So
do you think against Carlos this year, though, it might be? No? Oh, no.
Carlos, the superstar.
Yeah.
Really. I just think if Albon doesn't outperform Carlos, I think he's gone, or at least gone way to the back of the grid for next year. That's my thinking.
Interesting. It is interesting. I think Albon's got great pace, and I think great ability, but Carlos is very intelligent, very smart. And in a race, you sometimes hear Carlos on the radio talking about what he thinks they should do next kind of thing when he was with Ferrari. He's very impressive at that. So it will be fascinating to see how that combination works.
Mm. And then we've got V-carb. So we've got Yuki Tsunoda.
Can you just describe, can you just unpack racing V-carb?
Visa Cash App Racing Balls. There we go. V-carb.
Is it just like pick a name every year? Just see what you fancy?
Yes, basically. Yeah. Yeah. Because it wasn't Racing Balls last year.
No.
RB.
It was just RB.
Yeah.
But now it is Racing Balls this year. So it's all just a bit confusing.
Yeah. It is.
But Yuki is back behind the wheel. Do we know how well Yuki's going to get on and where he can go after this year?
I don't know. So he's Honda engine this year. He won't have a Honda engine next year if he stays with that team because Ford is coming in.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if the writing's on the wall.
And yet he did develop quite well, didn't he, over this last year. I mean, there were times when we were wondering, but he outperformed his teammates, though his young teammate, Liam Lawson, is the one who's managed to get the move to go with Max Verstappen at Red Bull. But he has driven pretty well. It's going to be interesting. He's got a new teammate, Isaac Hadjar from Formula 2, who was battling for that Formula 2 championship with Bortoleto, but didn't quite make it. But he is obviously a talent as well. So it will be fascinating. But as you say, Tsunoda may have to find a completely different team after this year, and he's going to have to really show what he can do this time.
But how, when the Honda thing is an issue? I mean, because Honda are going to start giving engines to Aston Martin.
He's such a great Japanese driver for the Japanese brand.
And backed by them.
So, exactly.
So moving on from the Racing Bulls, let's move on to Haas. And we talked a little bit about them in the past, of course. But Esteban Ocon, who's moved from Alpine, he went from Alpine before even the last race of last year. And Oliver Bearman, who was so impressive standing in for Carlos Sainz early last year. What do you think of that pairing? How do you think that's going to work?
If I had to rate my favourite drivers, Ocon would be at the bottom.
Oh, wow.
I know. Just because, having watched Drive to Survive over the years...
Is it the attitude?
I've seen some attitude, that's gone on. And that doesn't quite, fit with my preference of a character.
Fair.
Yeah. So I think, I think this is his last chance as well, to a certain extent. And if he doesn't do well, he'll be off to some sort of saloon series or Le Mans or something like that.
He had a step down from F1 last year, though, didn't he? I mean,
well, you root for him on that, honey. You can do that.
I'm just trying to, be polite. He had some nice moments last year.
Yeah.
And then also he didn't.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And Ollie?
And Ollie Bearman. I mean, Essex boy, come on. I do believe he's in Monte Carlo now, though, darling.
And he went to Italy early in his life, so that had a slight effect on his accent.
Yes,
as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
If only he could come out with some sort of Romford accent, it would be lovely.
In the minute.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm fully backing the Brit on that one, 100%. And he's just exciting, really exciting, because he's shown that he has got the intelligence to bring the car home. He knows what to do and he's quick. So I think I'm expecting him to outshine Ocon.
Okay. Well, that's going to be one to watch. Mm. Definitely.
Pretty bold. Yeah.
Very bold.
Yeah. And obviously we've got Alpine, who seemed to get a little bit better as the season went on. Who knows how well they're going to do this year. We've got Pierre Gasly behind the wheel, who I think has had a hair transplant. Looks like it. Looks good. We don't know for definite, but I'm just throwing it out there. It looks lovely, which I think is a positive. You feel free to answer me.
I'm just going to chuck you a spade and tell you to keep digging.
I'm just saying, social media has been all over it and saying it looks like he's done his hair. Oh, it's not a bad thing because everyone gets it done, but I think it looks lovely. But he's like got a new hairline. It looks good.
He can do no wrong in my book.
Aerodynamics. Gasly. Good.
And he's got Jack Doohan alongside him, who we spoke about a little bit earlier on.
Poor Jack. His eyes are going to be out on stalks for the first few.
You're races. Worried about the fact that he's under pressure already, you mean?
And yeah, exactly. Because it's so new. He is going to be like a rabbit in the headlight to a certain extent. All of a sudden, he's up this top of the world motorsport.
Yeah.
And he's got rumours swirling around already that he's going to lose his seat.
Yeah.
That's really unkind and not on in my book.
Yeah, that'll be a really nervous start for him, I think. But hopefully he can just rise above it and smash it.
He will have to.
But not literally smash it. No, he'll be fine.
Then Aston Martin, of course, a team that has one of the most experienced racing drivers anywhere in the world. And it's actually, we're going into this, 24 years since his first Australian Grand Prix, as he goes into the one this weekend. Yeah, Fernando Alonso is remarkable. And Lance Stroll, of course, alongside as ever. What do you reckon?
Right, Fernando Alonso, I cannot believe he's only ever won two world championships. That is a travesty, really. That's just awful. Lance Stroll, what has he got to do to be kicked out of his seat? What's he got to do? I mean, last year he punched up his... there was a fracas in the pits with his trainer.
Yeah.
So, and you know...
And he drove into the gravel last year. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Just drove into it. Just stopped in front of it and then just drove into it.
But yeah, he's... I don't know. Poor Fernando, because I think he really wanted Aston to do so well, and they were on a good trajectory to start with when he joined. But he has said that he is in it for the next 2 years. So at the end of 2026, then he'll make a decision as to whether he'll carry on. Let's hope that he wins a world title and Lewis wins one, and then everyone's happy. Okay. Then the old guard can move on.
So are you thinking then it will probably have to be Lewis for this year, because that won't happen to Fernando this year?
That is probably the most likely outcome in my dream.
Well, we're talking about the team that Lewis has left, of course. Mercedes next to George Russell. He now effectively becomes the number one there at the moment with Kimi Antonelli, who is one of four drivers who are under 21 years old coming into Formula One. And apparently that's the first time on the entry list that we've seen as many as four drivers under the age of 21.
Wow. God, at the age of 19, I had had my karting career. I'd done some single-seater racing and I wanted to be a Formula One driver. But at age 19, I was already fully 100% aware I was never going to be a Formula One driver. So I had risen and done by 19. And here he is, on that brink of becoming, you know, a Formula One driver. It's so fantastic. 19 years old.
Yeah.
What were you doing at 19?
I was mostly down the pub, really.
Yeah. Ben?
I was beginning to try and go racing, but I didn't race until I was 19. Yeah.
Well, you've got something in common with him then.
No, it wasn't Formula One. Slightly different level.
Toto seems to really believe in him, though. Like, he was so specific about his choice. And having Kimi come in, I think, is a really bold choice. I think he will learn a lot from George, but will George find him a threat? Question.
I don't think, yeah. Kimi's been on the junior Merck team since 2019, so he's aware of what's not. I think most amount of pressure is on Toto's shoulders this year.
Actually, he's still just 18. He's very nearly
19.
Oh, is he?
19 yeah.
No, he's very nearly 19, okay. But he's going at starting the season at 18. So.
Thank you. Beautiful.
No, I think he's the third youngest ever that they've had coming into Formula One over the years. Of course, Max Verstappen was the youngest. Mm. Stroll, funnily enough, we were mentioning him. He was the second youngest to come into Formula One.
Wonder how that happened. But yes, I think Toto's got a lot to... You know, he's got a lot on his plate this year because he hasn't given his team a great car over the last couple of years. And I think it's a gamble, I think, with the youngster.
Yeah.
Good stuff. It's going to be interesting. Okay, so Red Bull,
we have Max Verstappen and Liam Lawson. Now, obviously, Max is four-time world champion. He's a very driven, very hard, fast guy, very firm when he puts his helmet on. He's a mean racer. And when he's got the right car underneath him, he's wonderful. Liam is the one that I really hope he does well. This is not because I've interviewed him a few times and I really love him as a person. But to race alongside Max as a teammate is tricky in itself. And I really, really hope he smashes it for those first three races and then he can find his feet and then be a full season Red Bull driver. That's what I'm hoping for.
How would you describe his character, Liam's?
He's similar to Max. He's very chilled when he doesn't have his helmet on. And then the helmet goes on and he can be quite abrupt with a lot of people. Will, you know, flip a middle finger or two, which is, you know.
But, spicy.
Yeah, but I think that's a good thing for a racing driver. You know, you want to race hard.
Yeah, absolutely. The adrenaline is, as you say, the helmet goes on, the adrenaline comes in and off you go to do the job you're there for and what your dream in life. So you absolutely focus. So yeah, I totally understand.
Meanwhile,
that.
They're both just soppy biscuits when the helmet's...
I'm intrigued about Max though, because I don't think he's going to start every race from pole. And I would like to know that he can work hard for a place without being a bumper car sitch.
I think we saw, I know he did some daft things last year, but actually I do think he drove very well last year in a car that wasn't the fastest at times. He realised that he was just going to have to keep scoring points. Yeah. And I think we saw that from him.
Yeah.
And I think going into yet another year, he'll be even more aware of that now.
And to bring up Brazil one more time, that was an absolute masterclass. When everyone else was saying, we should not be racing, this is unsafe, we're all going to die, there was no mistakes from Max.
Metronomic.
Brilliant performance. Yeah.
Probably didn't even blink the entire time. Have you seen him on the sim? He's just like this. Just doesn't even, no movement in his eyes. But then meanwhile, he's also racing and then checking the screens. He knows what's going on the screens. Wild.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the real talent. I see that in the real talented drivers. They are the ones that driving the car at such a high level is so natural to them.
Yeah.
They then have a spare brain for reading everything else, watching. It's like Alonso's the same, Hamilton's the same. Mm. They have this ability to do that. Talking of Hamilton, of course, let's move on to Ferrari. The Hamilton-Leclerc battle, we've talked about it a little bit already. Vicky, what are your thoughts?
A dream pairing, honestly. Yeah. I mean, I thought Carlos Sainz and Leclerc was a dream pairing, but this one, I think, actually just nudges it. Brand Hamilton, seriously, what the boy has got the Midas touch. Surely he can sprinkle an extra bit of magic. And
you reckon?
And do it, I don't know. There's the hope in me. I'd love to see him win his eighth in a Ferrari. It would be amazing. But it's just a magical thing for me to witness him in red. I'm really invested in that. I love it. And Charles Leclerc can do no wrong in my book. And I just hope that his one-lap genius can compete with Lewis's race pace geniusness. And I wonder if they can
bring it all together.
Yeah,
that's a very good question. If they can work together well, then it could be very effective for the Ferrari team. So we will see. It's funny, I met a guy called Carl when I was traveling down here today, who said, are you involved in Formula One? We got chatting, and he's a huge fan of Ferrari. He's always been a fan of Lewis Hamilton, and now he's got the team together.
Oh, team. Oh, I love it.
Goodness. Also, hello to Carl, because we know that he's subscribed.
He did.
Oh, he's our one subscriber so far. So we're getting there. We're building.
Brilliant.
So we've talked about all of them but McLaren. And of course, McLaren won the Constructors' Championship last year after that big gap. Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri, two great drivers. We were talking about them a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Are they going to be fighting for the championship? How is this going to go?
First of all, can I just say why nobody has ever mentioned how Lando Norris looks like George Michael? He is, for me, an absolute George Michael lookalike. And
he doesn't.
Oh, he so does.
Well,
Ben,
we've got discussion now, guys.
No, he doesn't.
He so does. Every time I see him, I'm like, oh yeah, Georgie Michael. Anyway,
I can't see it.
No, go back and have another look. I really, really hope that Oscar Piastri absolutely smashes it out of the park for the first third of the season, forces McLaren to back a winner, and they back him and off he trots. Yeah. That's what I would really like to see, because Lando hasn't been quick enough to get it all right. And I think Oscar's just got the edge potentially on that.
Yeah. That's really interesting, because Lando outqualified him so many times last year. The key that I think Oscar has to find is getting qualifying better. He's a good racer, brilliant overtaker. The couple of things that he did last year, particularly Baku, the move he made in Baku was brilliant. He made other ones on Monza as well. But that qualifying is absolutely crucial to him, because at the moment, as we've seen, Lando is brilliant in qualifying. Not always the best off the line, although the final race of last year, Lando got it perfect and won from the start. So it's going to be fascinating, isn't it?
It's whether he's got the head screwed on to power through the entire season, because that's where I think Lando keeps messing up. Just too many little mistakes every now and again where the pressure clearly gets on his shoulders.
Yeah, needs to go and listen to Careless Whisper.
I can't see it.
I'd love to know if anyone else thinks the same. It's so obvious to me.
Well, it's something we're all going to be finding out.
Absolute cliffhanger.
Yeah, anyway, we move on. So that's the entire lineup for 2025. Before we move on, can I quickly bring up, there will be another team for 2026.
Yes.
Cadillac.
Yeah.
Cadillac's coming. Who do you reckon they'll sign up?
Perez, because no one's spoken about Perez. Poor Sergio. It was on everyone's lips for the last couple of years. Yeah. And now look, he's absolutely yesterday's man.
Yeah.
I know he's with Red Bull and he's going to be doing some exhibition stuff this year, but I'm sure he'll be sniffing. Bottas.
Oh, Bottas. I love him so much.
He could do something for next year. But it's, I just love the fact that there's another team, another two seats. Let's get these youngsters up and in, you know.
Oh, so you want the youngsters in, but you just named the older lot.
Well, you know, a big mix match.
Jack Doohan, he's probably going to need a job for next year by the sounds of things. So sign him up. Mm. So I think it's only fair, now we're going to start looking ahead to Melbourne, that we do our World Championship of the World. World Championship of the World. Let's go with that. So this is our prediction. This is how it works, right? So myself, Ben, producer Jim, and our guest will put in a prediction for the top three for the upcoming race and who will get the fastest lap. If you get the first place right, you get 6 points. Second place is 4 points. Third place is 2 points. And if you get the fastest lap right, then you get a point. Now, you are our first guest on the guest category. So you're kind of setting the bar for all future guests. So no pressure.
Can I set it really low?
Please do.
Yeah, thank you. Should I go now?
Go for it.
So my heart is ruling my head a little bit, but Oscar Piastri 1, Lando Norris 2, George Russell 3.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Fastest lap, although fastest lap doesn't get a point in real life this year anymore, does it?
It doesn't.
Is the rules. But on this show, I'm going to spread bet Lewis Hamilton. So I've got four chances of getting some points here.
You're going double McLaren. Interesting.
Mm, thanks.
Bold. Producer Jim?
I'm going double Ferrari.
Oh.
Yeah. That's how much I've bought into this. I'm going Charles first, Lewis second, Oscar home podium third, with Verstappen fastest lap. Again, a spread bet.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair way of doing it, the spread bet thing, which I haven't done online. Ben, do you want to go?
Mine's actually not too dissimilar from Jim's, because I'm going for Charles Leclerc as the winner, as I was saying. You know, he's had good success there in the past. I'm going for Oscar Piastri finishing second, getting a podium for an Australian driver there. And I'm going for Max Verstappen third, with fastest lap Lando Norris.
Mm. Interesting. So I'm going P1 Max. This is not because I have a contract with Red Bull.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. I genuinely think Max will do it. I'm going P2 George, because I think testing, he seems pretty quick. He feels pretty confident. He's going in as number one driver. He'll be pretty cocky. I think he'll go in and he'll do pretty well. P3, I'm going for Oscar, because home race, and I think he's going to outdrive Lando. And then fastest lap, I'm giving to George, I think. Interesting, we've all gone Oscar.
Yeah, it's partly because it's Australia and we would love to see him go well. On the other hand, there can be the issue that you're actually under more pressure when you're at your home event sometimes. Mm. Yes, of course, Charles Leclerc got there, as we were speaking earlier about his home event at Monaco last year. Sometimes, though, you are under increasing pressure. But I think Oscar Piastri's got that coolness to him to deal with that quite well, don't you?
Yeah, I do. And Jenson Button never won at Silverstone.
No.
So there is that home.
Absolutely.
Home pressure.
Home worry. Yeah, exactly.
It can be a problem sometimes. Yeah. But I think we would all love to see Piastri on the podium.
Yeah.
That would be magic.
That would be amazing. And I think we all can agree that we think he's going to be number one McLaren driver for the year.
No, I think that's an interesting one. That's a really interesting
one. Do you disagree? You're reacting like you disagree. I don't know.
I'm honestly a bit open about this because I think Lando still has the ability to develop further.
Yeah.
And Oscar, I am very impressed with Oscar. What he did, you know, last year was brilliant. But I'm not 100% sure how it's going to go between Norris and Piastri this year. And I think that's one of the most fascinating aspects. You know, there's so much that we've been talking about, especially Hamilton, Leclerc. But there's no doubt that Piastri versus Norris, two same drivers for that strong McLaren team, it's going to be really interesting.
Wise owl, Ben.
Yeah. We shall see.
We were talking about owls earlier, weren't we?
We were. I rescued a tawny owl from my garden this week.
Should we finish on your fun fact about owls?
Oh, yeah, fun fact about owls. Why do owls have such twisty heads?
I don't know.
Because their eyeballs don't actually move in their sockets.
Well, there we go. Finishing on an interesting fact. We're now going to make that a thing every week because we can. But thank you very much for joining us on our first episode of Midweek F1. Thank you for being our first guest.
My absolute pleasure.
Yeah. So we'll be back same time next week, where we'll be discussing what happened in Australia and looking ahead to
China coming up.
Exciting. Don't forget to subscribe and we'll see you next time.